super critical for you, both as a company CEO or as a product manager, really, to figure out as soon as possible in your product journey, what is the right pricing model and what is the right willingness to pay of the customer. And those decisions are as difficult as finding product market fit itself.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of How to Product, a podcast series on product management brought to you by PM School and your host, Arjav Jain. This podcast series is focused on bringing in product leaders from across the globe and creating valuable content on product management for our listeners with a key focus on early in-career product professionals. Are you looking to make a career transition to product management? Take the first step to becoming an amazing product manager. PM School will help you get tested on product skills. We do everything we possibly can to kickstart your PM career, and we would help you prepare a resume, practice interviews, and even help you in salary negotiation. Talk to us to understand how to approach companies and plan your move into product management. We have a two-month program. You can join us from anywhere, so it's remote, that prepares you to excel in your first job as a product manager or to make a smooth transition to leading product role in your current and new organization. Throughout the program, you will become familiar with a broad range of topics such as product discovery, product roadmap, market research, agile, scrum, product development, and planning, which will provide you with a strong foundation to become a skilled product manager. If you are seriously planning to start your product management journey soon and land that product role in your dream company, we recommend you book a convenient time for the screening call with one of our career advisors. Just write to us on hello@pmschool.io and we will get back to you. This episode breaks down product growth and the levers for right pricing. It's such a fun topic to talk about because it's so difficult to get right. I'm sure you're going to love this one. Let's dive right into it. I have with me someone who's a well-known personality in the Indian product ecosystem, Anuj Rathi, Senior VP of Revenue and Growth, including product at Swiggy. He spent over 6 years at Swiggy, taking it to where it is today. Previously, he has worked as a product leader at Snapdeal and Walmart. Interestingly, he was the first product manager at Flipkart 13 years ago, when product management was still nascent in India. Notably, he is also an alum of the prestigious IIT Kanpur. Thank you so much for joining us, Anuj.
Thank you, Arjav, and great to be here.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure to interact with you in a few forums before this, and it's always been a great learning experience, and I've walked away with so much. So I'm very excited for this episode. So I'm going to dive right in. But before that, I want to get to know sort of the human behind the product leader that Anuj is, right? So let's get to know you a little bit. What's the best advice someone has given you?
I think the best advice that someone has given me is quite recent, actually. And actually, many people have given me that advice many times in my career, but I've started taking it more seriously. Is that product management, and it's so obvious, right? Product management is a function where you have to collaborate with so many people in order to like get anything done. And if you are just operating all by yourself, like doing the best work that you can do and so on and so forth, that is never sufficient. Building alliances is the right way to actually get anything done. And I'm not talking from the point of view of building alliances inside the company so that you are able to actually move your product roadmap forward, etc., etc. But if you're looking for impact, there are two things, right? You have to prioritize the right things and you have to ship them in time and you have to go for the impact. If you don't have the right kind of alliances and if you don't have the right kind of people who are going to back you up when you need to, even if you're doing the best work, the prioritization is just never going to happen. Yeah. And over a period of time, that compounds. So I've had like a second epiphany once again that, you know, this is really important. So yeah, that's top of my mind right now.
Yeah, that definitely is great advice. And so what do you do outside of work? Like, what's your top hobby right now?
So I have three hobbies that I pursue. Okay. Actually, so I play guitar. Okay. And I love photography.
Okay.
And I play poker. So these are like my three hobbies. And guitar, in fact, like, you know, Bangalore is like really known for its bad traffic jams.
Yeah.
Whenever I used to go to office, like the calls would drop. I could not take interviews and so on and so forth. what is the best way to utilize my time that is not work? And then I picked up that in the car. So my guitar learning happened in the car itself, at least for the first day. That's how I got everything.
Nice. Was that off YouTube or?
YouTube.
Wow. Okay. I thought you had like a private instructor in the car with you.
Not in the car, though.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Let's dive into this one. All right. So when I looked at your experience, sort of the first question that came to my mind was, I wanted to understand product management in e-commerce, right? You're not doing typical product development like you would at Swiggy. Let's say you want to build a feature at Swiggy. As a PM, let's say on a Flipkart state, right? You're basically working, it's a marketplace. So you're selling stuff that is listed there. Now, I want to understand why is that product management? And how do the rules sort of change in that world compared to a normal world of, you know, product development per se?
And that's a very interesting question. By the way, we'll come to Swiggy a little bit later. Let me address the part of product management in Flipkart. Of Flipkart or e-commerce in general, right? Like, I would think of e-commerce as an instance of a wider set of products that you think of marketplaces. Like, for example, Tinder is a marketplace. There's like, I would not want to call it buyer and seller, but there's demand and supply. Like, there are two pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
That's true for like so many different things. For example, Uber, it's like you have a rider and a passenger. E-commerce is a buyer and a seller. So there are marketplaces where you have to think about product management in a different way. The way it kind of changes on compared to when you're building a product only for one user where it's largely software driven, is that you have more variables coming in and you have to like master a whole bunch of other tricks and techniques in order to actually deliver impact. Mm-hmm. So you're not selling software, but you are actually still catering to a customer and very, very different set of customers, especially if you're dealing with a horizontal marketplace, which has many, many categories.
Yeah.
You have to understand, again, the principles are the same. You start with the customer, you think about what is it that they really want? Also, what is the kind of price that they want? How they're discovering you? How can I make the life simplest for them, starting from the from how do I acquire them, why do they visit us, how can I make the discovery of the product easiest for them, how can I make sure that they're able to like evaluate between multiple products, how can I make sure that they are able to pay, and then of course there's this entire supply chain CX journey and so on. All of these are various kind of products. The difference that I would say is like every time you're thinking about these products, there is an angle of a physical good or which has a certain price. So you cannot independently take product decisions. You have to be very aware. You have to be very business oriented and you have to understand your supply chain very, very well in order to do a good job at being a product manager. That's just one part of the complexities that's important. The other part of the complexities, I would say, when you're managing marketplaces, usually in product management, you think about, start from the customer. And if you're very empathetic, then you will be able to like actually reach like a good place. Here you have to manage two almost opposing empathies and find win-wins. So one is a buyer, but the other is a seller. And in order to build a stable marketplace, which kind of stands the test of time, you have to work on both these empathies together. Well, you may be on the buyer side and you're only thinking about that. But if you ignore the seller and ignore if they are getting the fair price and ignore what are the motivations behind the seller, if they are placed an ad versus if somebody who is putting a discount, how do these systems interact? And together, what is a product that finally comes in front of the user? The same may be true if you are actually a product manager on the seller side. You can't only think about the seller. You have to think about how does this manifest in terms of the customer experience and so on. So that's, for example, like a gist of marketplace product management. But this is still, I would say, simpler than Swiggy. Because e-commerce marketplaces are two-way marketplaces. You have buyers and sellers. Swiggy, for example, is a food delivery marketplace, a three-way marketplace. It's a buyer, seller, and a delivery executive. It's almost like a multiplication of Amazon with an Uber.
Right.
So in Amazon, you have buyers and sellers. The real complexity comes because you have millions of products. You have, of course, hundreds of thousands of sellers. You have millions of customers. And the interface between them is all of these millions of products. And really, the complexity is, how do these sellers actually put all of these different kind of SKUs up on the app? How do I know that these are similar, common, different, and so on, categorization, catalog management, supply chain warehousing, all of that is complex. And on the consumer side, how am I able to actually select through the right product and make the payment and so on? But really, the complexity is there. Think about, compare and contrast that with, say, an Uber. You have only 5 SKUs. You don't have millions of SKUs.
Right.
You don't have that problem. You will select an Uber Go or Uber Black or whatever.
Yeah.
But the complexity there is everything is real time.
Yeah.
The app is different 1 minute from now and 100 meters from here. And everything is changing.
Yeah.
You can think of that as a mesh of demand and supply moving.
Yeah.
At the same time, the pricing is changing real time. The surges are changing real time.
Yeah.
X number of drivers are coming in into the pool of available drivers and Y number of passengers are moving out. And how do you manage it like throughout the city, hyper-locally and so on, while thinking about surge and demand and all of those things.
Yeah.
Now, in case of Swiggy, we had to think about an Amazon kind of an experience because users expect that I should be able to look at a menu.
Yeah.
And like, buy things properly and like very e-commerce experience. Whereas in the back end, what is happening is an Uber kind of an experience because delivery executors are moving in and out. So it's even more complex.
Right. Well, what I love from this is how you said there are some things that are like common at its core, at the underlying principles of product management, which is just being empathetic towards your customers, how you do discovery, how you do checkout journeys, all of that is the same across. But like having empathy towards all the customers in the ecosystem, even if you're not serving for them, is another sort of underlying point that you highlighted, which
came
out.
Yeah, because you make decisions, and in some cases, those decisions are not as obvious. For example, I was recently consulting an e-commerce, actually a food delivery company in the US.
Okay.
And they were like, and I would not name the company, but they were like very focused only on pizza delivery places, and they were building software for them. And we're seeing that what are the kind of customers that you're going after, and what is it that you want to optimize for? Do you want to optimize for people who are new to DoorDash, for example?
Yeah.
Or are you optimizing for who are regular, sellers on DoorDash already?
Yeah.
But the answer to them is so different.
Right.
And if you are a DoorDash product manager, how do I build for a platform of ads which optimizes for both of them? Should I basically tell you that, hey, you're a new customer or you're a new restaurant? I am giving you access to all the users in this area who have never eaten pizza from your place.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm selling this ad to a restaurant which is saying, I'm giving you this product so that you can retain your customers who are eating pizzas from you.
Yeah.
Now, both are products that will exist on DoorDash, for example.
Yeah.
Then how do these two actually come together? Yeah. And eventually, what's the product that the user sees?
Right.
That's some third product that is getting built.
Yeah.
So you have to make decisions on all these sides to eventually arrive at an answer. So in this case, you have to choose a strategy.
Yeah, very interesting. And at the same time, not cannibalizing sort of your own business, right? In terms of making sure both partners are happy. It is very interesting. So from one of the previous webinars you did, I caught on to something, right? You said growth is effective when the product is priced right. And I sat down to think about that statement a little bit, but I want to see if you can help break it down for us. Like, what does that really mean? And what is effective growth and priced right?
Look, if we break down, overall product into like one of its core principles, like I'm a big believer of like these few things.
Yeah.
Especially in e-commerce or whenever there is a cost of goods that is there, you have to make sure that at a unit level, you are being profitable.
Yeah.
And that could be penny wise pound foolish. You may still be in the growth stage and the investment stage and so on. And there has to be some path to profitability of your product and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But at some point of time, you have to make sure that on a per order basis, you are making money. Now, if you are chasing growth at the while actually going for extremely cheap prices, etc., that may give you an illusion of a product market fit. That is not a product market fit. Because if I buy an iPhone for say $1,000 and sell at $900, will you call it? And I create an e-commerce site to do that, and I'm beating Amazon every single day. Would you call that a product market fit? That's a fake product market fit. And it will sell. It will sell. It will beat Amazon on all metrics, including, and nobody will start, will care about the reviews that were written, or they would not care about the CX, hey, it comes in 7 days and so on. That's the first point, that the price is the first indicator of whether it's succeeding or not. But you have got to make money. So unless you are able to hit your product market fit at the right price, which is competitive and which is making your company not sink is the starting point. And hence, you have to think about your products when it is priced at the value that that it should be. So that's on the e-commerce side. At the other end also, like the function of an enterprise is also to make money. And your job as a product manager is to never leave money on the table. You have to deliver value to your users. At the same time, you have to get the right kind of value from the user back. That's a fair transaction. I think what I've seen is many product managers who are starting up, at least in the first few years of their career trajectory, they care too much about the customer, but they don't kind of fully realize that, hey, it is, at the end of the day, it's a transaction between the customer and the company. And I have to stand for the company also. So I don't want to leave any value on the table while delivering the best value to the user.
Yeah. Awesome. So we'll go down a level, right? So how do you measure effective growth? And then how do you measure the right price, right? So what are some ways to identify the right price for the product you're selling? And an example of a product that you worked on, maybe with some basic breakdown of how you get to that right price, right?
Sure. I think it is as tough a question as like the meaning of life. So let me just pricing is as tough as product itself.
Yeah.
And I really think product managers would do themselves like a lot of favor if they were to understand how to price a product.
Yeah.
Right. There are broadly like five or six different kind of pricing models. And of course there are ways in which you can tweak and twist and turn. But you really need to understand what is the kind of marketplace you are playing in and what is the kind of pricing model that you have to go after. So I'll start with a very simple concept. Assuming that your product is working and all of things are fine and so on, you have to start with what is a willingness to pay. So WTP is the most important concept in the product. After product market fit, assume that your product has product market fit, but what is a willingness to pay on your product? And there are various kind of pricing models that you can now think about. For example, you can go after a pricing model which says it's a cost plus pricing model. I manufacture this good in X, I will sell at 30% off, and it's always constant pricing. It changes when the cost changes. You can go with a dynamic pricing model. For example, the price, which is say the Uber pricing. You never know what is the price from A to B. It keeps on changing. There is no anchor. There is no anchor to kilometers even. There's some anchor to kilometers, but it keeps on. When does search come? When does it not come, etc.
Yeah.
But that pricing model, for example, is applicable to a business which is as dynamic and in real time, products. Just like what we are talking about in Uber.
Yeah.
There could be pricing model like freemium. I will let, say a Slack.
Yeah.
I will let you use for till the time you hit X number of users or X number of messages and so on.
Yeah.
After a certain time, you've used the free version, and then here are new features that are unlocked at a premium when you pay.
Yeah.
Then there's pay as you go, like AWS.
Yeah.
Like here's, hey, as much as you use, we will charge you accordingly and so on.
Yeah.
And there are a few more pricing models. It is super critical for you to realize what is the, or a fifth one, of course, is ads. It's not real pricing model, but you're not really charging money from the user, but you're charging somebody else to pay for you.
Right.
Super critical for you, both as a company CEO or as a product manager, really, to figure out as soon as possible in your product journey, what is the right pricing model and what is the right willingness to pay of the customer. And those decisions are as difficult as finding product market fit itself. Usual mistakes that companies do, or product managers in those companies do, is they will start with a beta in which they don't charge at all. And they say, I just want to, figure out whether the product works and so on and so forth. Well, sure, you can do that. But if you're starting the journey of pricing after you think the usability works and the product does the job,
you're
already late. You have to have a parallel thread on asking, how much will you pay me for this one? If users are just using it because it was free, you may be like many, many years late when you find out what price and what is the model that to work.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Reddit is like a great example that I quote. Maybe 15 years to find out what should be the pricing model. They want to fight ads for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Eventually, they have to land there.
Yeah.
Ads is the worst pricing model that's out there. Every other pricing usually is better than that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my high-level thoughts. I'll go back to your question. Can you repeat that one once again?
Yeah, so you answered, right? How do you identify the right price for what you're selling and what is effective growth in mind.
That particular part.
Yeah.
I talked about willingness to pay.
Yeah.
You have to start with who's your customer. Mm-hmm. Which are the segments of customers that you want to target? Within those segments, what is the right willingness to pay? And it's very tempting in the beginning of a product that, you know, everybody is in my segment, or choose an extremely large group of people in my segment. And then when you're trying to identify what is the price point that you want to sell at, people are giving you different answers.
Yeah.
And actually all those answers are fake because they are not paying from the wallet.
Yeah.
So it's extremely difficult for that. So you have to start which are the segments that I'm going to target. Actually, try to understand what is the kind of prices that work for them by throwing out a pricing model as soon as possible and then coming back to that. So that's very iterative, and that's keep on changing, especially when there's competition. I think another common misconception in product management is that you should never look at competition. You know, only look at your user. If you're having value to your user, these are all fake metrics and all of that.
Yeah.
And I beg to differ. I think competition does provide a superb anchor. Your users are actually, if they are using your competition, that's one anchor that they are providing better value than you.
Exactly.
So product managers who are ignoring competition are, I think, make a mistake. Of course, you have to start with the customer.
Yeah.
But if your customers are going to the competition with a certain price, you have to take that step as well.
Yeah. Interesting. So there was another point of that question, which is, how do you measure effective growth? We spoke about right price, but how do you measure effective growth?
Yeah, I think that goes back, Arjav, on what is your company strategy? What's the core hypothesis around your strategy is built?
Mm-hmm.
There are many ways in which growth can be achieved. If you are a plush company with hundreds of millions of dollars of VC money right now, and you are in the market to take a large company by storm and steal their customer base and so on without worrying about unit economics, your answer of effective growth will look very different than somebody like a bootstrap person looking at I will never spend any money on marketing. I will just grow organically. It's only going to be product-led growth. That answer is going to be different.
Yeah.
The effective growth answer really lies within what your strategy was for the year or for next 3 years and so on. What was the core thesis that needed to work, and are being the best versions of them of yourselves? When you hit an extremely high, or when you noted an extremely high goal, did you have good thesis around how do I reach there, and are you hitting your growth and profitability metrics together? So the answers would be different across different companies. So I can't give a generic one.
Yeah,
but it needs to map back to your strategy.
Yeah, that's a good framework to sort of fall back to, right? So that's super helpful. The last part of that question was the process of getting to that right price, right? Which is, if you can take an example of a product that you've worked on, and just walk us through the framework or what went into your brain to get to that right price, what levers you had to pull, what to consider. I know that conversation can go on forever, but it's maybe a framework.
Sure. I'll give you a simple framework and then we can expand on that a little.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Swiggy One is a membership program.
Right? Yeah.
Membership program by definition is where you have to pay money and you'll get some benefit.
Yeah.
Right. Creating a membership program is again as difficult as creating a startup. It is very difficult. There are hundreds of ways to do that.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Somebody will create a miles based thing. Somebody will create a points based thing. Somebody will create a tiered thing. Somebody will create which kind of tier should go.
Yeah.
Within each of those, what are the benefits that I should give? And then what price I should charge? Or should I not charge prices? Should I tie with someone?
Yeah.
It's all a 0-to-1 game, and that keeps on evolving because once you launch something, then you keep on changing, then launches something. So a bunch of these things happen, right? So the starting point itself was we had to essentially arrive at, do we need a membership program? Do you need a loyalty point program? Once we decided that we needed a membership program, the users will need to pay X so that we can deliver Y value.
Yeah.
And then what cost associated with that? So we started with the pricing on that part as a simple CAC to LTV part, that if we are charging, say, $1,000 to a user, for example, in a month, if they're taking X rupees away from us in forms of free delivery, they will be unprofitable for X months. But in the next 18 months, so the 2-year payback period of this user should essentially be more than zero. So that was a starting point that we do not want very unprofitable users, for example.
Yeah.
So we were clear from day one that they need to be profitable users. they need to be also users who are high frequency users. They need to be affluent users and so on. Because even if they're not profitable right now, they will eventually be profitable. That's kind of the Swiggy strategy or the Swiggy One strategy and so on.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the starting point. Now, why did we do this? Because if we had taken an in-situ view of the user, then we could have just landed with, hey, per order, are these users making money? No. Then we would not even launch a membership program, or we'll make it super expensive for them.
Yeah.
Because only that way we are able to create a membership program. So we didn't take that approach. We took a long-term view and we created the model scheme. How should it actually look like? So that was the starting point. Then what we did, we are a hyper-local business, and we are not like an Amazon Prime, or which is a national business, and you look at it like that. So we looked at it every city. So in say a Bangalore, in say a Mumbai and so on. So we had two axes. One is what we call the unit economics axis.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is called the frequency axis.
Okay.
So within 2 frequency per month, 2 to 4 frequency per month, 2, 15 plus, 24 plus frequency per month. And the other axis is basically unit economics, or even simple average order values of the users.
Yeah.
Simple framework. Then for these users, we essentially created like lines on which of these sales do we want to protect through our membership program. That goes back to your strategy.
Yeah.
Not everybody, this membership program is not for everyone.
Right.
So that's the product strategy on which are the users that you want to protect. Now within those sales, and you have different segments. So you basically say, what is the willingness to pay? And that's when your benefits come into account. And then you actually interview users and they actually understand, if I give you this program for $249 per month, will you buy? If I give you for $1,000 per month, will you buy? Et cetera, et cetera. So we netted out at some price, but for all of these users. So then we launched and we were very happy with the results that we're seeing. Acquisition prices were different than renewal prices and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So a lot of people got very okay with like paying more and so on. So not a problem. All this pricing was going on well till the time we hit a competitor. And at the same time, we hit pressure on unit economics per month. So we had to make the program a little cheaper. So we had three options. Either we could make it invite only. So we didn't even offer a bunch of people. Or we reduce benefits across the program so that the costs are down. Or third, could we use differential pricing? So each cell would have a different price.
Okay.
And a different duration. So for a cell, 0 to 2 frequency, and at 400 rupees AOV, for example, you would have a price of, say, 249, but the plan is only for 3 months.
Okay.
You don't get a 12-month plan. So we played around those variables. So each cell had its own micro strategy that this is the user that I want to make money off.
Yeah.
This is the user that I want to ring fence at any cost.
Yeah.
An affluent user that I want to bring to the platform, even if it is sold at zero.
Right.
So we had to create those micro strategies across some 106 segments. So that was the starting point. It becomes a tough business to manage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then after that, you have to look at whether these users are giving you the kind of frequencies and AOVs and all of that you predicted.
Yeah.
But you have to be really sharp. It is a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But fortunately or unfortunately, I think good product managers will do like all the hard work required to arrive at that price.
Yeah. Wow. Love that you broke it down in terms of just membership versus loyalty, right? Like it's trying to make these decisions early on when all you have is just talking to people, looking at competition, looking at data, and not actually having the product within your sort of app. Definitely hard.
There are some frameworks on this part as well.
Yeah.
Very high level. So there's one book that I recommended that folks should read. It's called Monetizing Innovation.
Okay.
It talks about pricing and memberships and segmentation, etc. in detail.
Okay.
Fascinating book. So you should get a bunch of concepts will come out of that.
Sure.
So the author of this book, like we were actually working with this guy at Swiggy, and we were looking at where do membership programs lie, and broadly where do loyalty programs lie? Why do people choose one or the other?
Yeah.
One framework that we kind of resonated with us, and we don't know whether it's true or not, is that if you are a company that people, if you're a product which is a high frequency product for which people pay money for, and you want to get people to move to higher frequencies, even higher, then membership programs are better for you, where you paid memberships.
Right.
If you are a low frequency product like a travel, travel maybe 4 times in a year or something like that, or even commerce, like in Flipkart, for example.
Yeah,
you would rather, or you are actually better served by having a point-based loyalty tiered program and so on.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because when you're traveling, you may keep on changing your, hey, should I go from or book from, say, a Cleartrip versus a examples.
Yeah.
There's really no difference. Next time when you're booking, is like you'll look at price once again.
Exactly.
Always want to leave some balance in the customer's account. So whenever they are making that decision, even after 6 months, hey, I must have had something here.
Right.
So that part.
Yeah.
You can never get them to commit to any money because you are using Yatra.
Yeah. Commission
program didn't work there.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Lovely. Anuj, before you go, any tips for folks who are looking to break into product management?
I think it's so obvious in hindsight, but I think the number one tip that I would give anybody who is looking to break into product management is look first at the company that you're trying to join. Look at examples where have other people from another field have been able to move into product management directly or not. So either you're trying to break into product management directly, or maybe you're a designer, or maybe you're an analyst. It's usually better to make a Delta One move. A Delta One move is either I will move from analytics, same job, but I will do analytics at some other company.
Yeah.
Or moving from analytics to product management in my company.
Yeah.
If your company actively does that and you have had history, then you will also understand the story behind it. How did successful people who did it, what worked, your particular company.
Yeah.
Go for that path, at least to some extent.
Yeah.
If then find a company and maybe join once again as analyst and go on that path. Like it's a very simple, straightforward advice, but the kind of people that I've seen who have moved into product management with these two simple tips, they've actually been able to move successfully there. Of course, now I can give you all the theoretical pointers, what you should learn, how you should think about the customers, how you should price, how you should, learn to talk with engineers. I'm assuming you are good at all of that.
Yeah.
This is now a practical tip on if you really want to break into product
management. Right. Awesome. This reminded me of the advice that I was given by my first ever manager when I wanted to become a product manager, right? And this was at the company that I was at within the same team. So that's exactly what he said. He said, change one variable, right? You know the domain, you're in the same organization, you only want to change software engineering to product management. So, right? So that's like, I got reminded of that when you said that Delta One move. But yeah, great advice. Anuj, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. So much takeaway, and this was nothing short of that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Arjav. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Anuj always leaves us wanting for more time with him because he's just got so much knowledge and wisdom to offer. I thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with him. My key takeaways were that right pricing is as hard as product management. Think about pricing in your journey to PMF or product market fit rather than after. Definition of growth is based on the stage of the company that you're in, and identifying that is key. And if you're chasing growth with bad pricing, it is not product market fit. Anyway, if you're interested in solving product case challenges or experiencing what a PM does by stepping into the shoes of a product manager in a live program, you should check out pmschool.io. If you like what you heard, do share this with your friends, colleagues, and family members. And give us a rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of your other favorite podcast streaming apps. We'll be back with another one very soon. And until then, just stay curious and stay safe. This is your host, Arjav Jain, signing off.